Hi, and welcome everyone to HeartShift Radio. This is the podcast where you learn to shift your heart, shift your thoughts, and then shift your life. I'm Marcy Newman, the HeartShift Coach. I'm an intuitive, an energy healer, and I have designed a very powerful process called heart shifting. And I help people who struggle with change, and specifically, I help people to find their inner peace, the strength and the courage to change, and to teach them how to forgive and to let go of the past. I also help people to recognize the beliefs and patterns that are no longer serving them, and the dense energy that's keeping them from fully reaching their potential. I teach how to recalibrate that energy and harness it into complete self-love lifestyle. HeartShift Radio is, in fact, all about self-love and the processes that it takes to get there. And I'm really very honored to share my expertise today, but also to share my space with a very special guest. I want you all to welcome Peter Anthony. Peter Anthony and I actually met at the IANS conference in Colorado. And he was just such an incredible speaker, and I wanted so much to share his story and to share his energy and his presence with you. I think, as you'll see as we go on in this interview, that Peter is coming from a different place. Okay, it's a place where it's so evident that his consciousness has expanded to enable him to really embrace what I believe to be truth. And so it's truth that we're going to speak about today. So, Peter, I want to wholeheartedly welcome you and also thank you for coming back again. I've been looking so forward to our time today. So thank you.
Well, I thank you, and I also thank your listening audience, because this is something I'm very passionate about, something I feel connected to, and so it means the world to me to share what I consider a part of my brushstroke. And so, you know, so if someone understands the brushes of an artist, it's just how we communicate. So I hope today that I'm able to at least share a couple of shades of color that you can relate to.
I'm sure that you will. So what's interesting, all of you listeners, is that you may have noticed that Peter, you know, uses his artistic background to describe a lot of what he sees and what he does. But Peter, that was really part of, shall I say, a past life while here on this earth, because it's not exactly what you're doing today, but I know that it's was such a huge stepping stone in bringing you today where you are, but also in preparing you for the work that you're doing now. So I want to invite our audience, of course, to go to Peter's website, which is theaccidentalprophet.com. And I want you to read all about him, because, oh my God, it's such an incredible turn of events that brought Peter to where he is today. But a quick synopsis, and please, Peter, you jump in and you fill in some of these spaces. But Peter actually started out as a special effects makeup artist. Is that correct?
Yes, I was starting to become a special effects makeup artist, and ended up with CBS in the news division with people like Dan Rather and Diane Sawyer when she was there, Leslie Stahl and Bob Schieffer, and the whole list of people at the news division, which led me to episodic television. So, yeah, I was very lucky. The right place, the right time, and took the job for the wrong reasons, but it ended up being the right reason. So, yes.
But who knew? That's the delight of this life, right? Where we get to see how the whole succession just lays itself out at our feet. But I know that you had a particular incident that happened in your life that created this explosion. Mm-hmm. And I'd love so much for you to share that with our audience so that they can understand how you went from this, this whole Hollywood persona, right? I mean, so entrenched in that world, to what it is that you're really here sharing at this time in your life. Tell us what happened.
I have to kind of contribute that to I had a near-death experience on November the 11th. I died at 11:11 p.m. on November the 11th. So think about that, 11:11.
Oh my God.
And room 11 of all, or operating room number 11. So you think about that. And for me, and so many of us who have crossed.
I just have to interject. I am covered with what I call God bumps. So there's great significance to that for me as well. So go right ahead.
Okay. But I think, you know, looking back at that moment, I was in the height of my career. I was the it boy at that time, and I crossed over. And I think the biggest impact, and so many of us who've crossed over, we all have our own impact moments of our near-death experience. Mine were many, as so are so many. But I think the greatest thing that I learned coming back was, you know, I saw so much conflict on the planet. And while I was viewing conflict on the planet, I was surrounded in this thing called complete love, kindness, and compassion, to the point that it just was in my presence from inner to outer. And there was no outer, meaning physical. There was only inner, which was essence, spirit, energy. But, you know, so that event in itself, when you've crossed over and you feel this love, and I say love, people hear this all the time, and we've heard it so often that we kind of just take for granted that it's, oh yeah, they crossed over, they felt love. But I ask your listening audience, imagine the love you have for your wife or your girlfriend or your boyfriend, or for that matter, your dog or your cat, or someone who's just your mentor. You have great, complete trust and love, and just respect them, you know, so much. And multiply that 10 times, 10 times, 10 times 1 million. That's what you learn when you cross over. And so when I came back, for me, my whole world changed to the point of I wanted to come back and make a difference. And part of that difference was to show love and kindness every day. And so that became my new MO. That became my operation, Desert Storm, if you will. And I set out to do that. And in by doing so, the career that I was in, you can call it Hollywood, I call it the entertainment industry, I began to see things that didn't relate to my aha. And so for me, that wasn't going to change, but what was going to change was my new direction. And so I set out to find me. And by finding me, that was letting go of all those things from my past. And I set on a road of forgiveness for all those things that hurt me, all those people that hurt me, and I began to let go and let God. And I set out on a path of just finding the new land, the new adventure, the new me, the new love. And that became a part of my new mission. I was given a second chance for a reason, and I made sure that when I came back that I was going to cross that finish line.
So, you know, you talk about this incredible experience that you had of, you know, such heart and mind-blowing expansiveness. So it must have been so difficult for you, I imagine, to actually come back to this world. Because as we know, the world never stops, right? It never stops being an expression of the full collective. So we're bombarded constantly with challenges of all kinds. How did you make that transition?
Well, I was given 3 months to live. And in the process of being given 3 months to live, I had this, the doctors said these inexplicable reasons of reactions to all medications, which kind of prevented me from healing. And on the other side, I saw my future. I saw what I was doing, and I knew that I was going to make it. So their reality was the first test I had. That was not my reality. And so I started living my life as though I was here to live forever. And so when you're given 3 months to live and you all of a sudden you go blind and you're in a wheelchair, you kind of start making some serious choices, right?
Wow.
And so to their world, I became the witchy woo-woo man. And I sought out a shaman Indian. I began to do visualization. I didn't even know what I was doing, but I began to understand that I could see myself healthy. So therefore, my thought became my Bible. I began to visualize my colon, my intestinal tract, all these things healing. They diagnosed me with gout. They couldn't understand why I lost my vision. They couldn't understand why I wasn't able to walk. And I began to visualize myself walking and talking and seeing and just believing that I was healed. And so that became their opinion versus my opinion was the conflict. And I thought to myself, you have a choice here. You can go back and die, and you're not scheduled to die this time around. So, or you make some serious choices. So I sought out a whole new path of the metaphysical world, not knowing what the metaphysical world was. So I began to read, and I began to study numerology, and I began to study astrology because I saw all these things when I crossed over. And so it became my new reality, and that became the healing point of my new life. It started with books. It started with Sheldon McLean's Out on a Limb. It started with You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay. It became Many Masters and Many Lives, Many Masters. Mm-hmm. Became my Bible. And so, as I said, I began to change those things that prevented me from moving forward and welcome those new things that brought me new energy, new understanding.
So you mentioned that you went into numerology. What was the impetus for that? I mean, that honestly is sort of like on the outskirts, right? We don't hear about numerology so often as we do astrology or some of the other things that you were describing. What took you in that direction?
Because when I crossed over, I saw all these quantum physics codes, mathematical codes, angel codes, all in mathematical equations. And as I was going through the tunnel towards my life review, I gathered and understood and dissected and basically knew everything mathematically that was being downloaded into my spirit brain. And when I came back, I had this quest for knowledge of ancient math and ancient astrology. And so I began to study.
Amazing.
And this became, yeah. So that became, as I said, book after book after book. I couldn't get enough. I was just like this crazy person, you know, having to read everything. Meanwhile, the doctors are saying, Yuko, you know, all right, so we're losing your vision here. I went from 20/20 to 20/40 to 20/60, just to nothing.
Wow.
And I said, you know, so I had a dear friend of mine who was reading everything to me while I was going through this horrible cycle of health. And and it all made sense to me. So it became, as I said, the seeking of the new land. Mm. And that became, as I said, that became the new path. To this day, I have numerology clients and astrology clients all around the world. And I go back to that moment in my history where I go back, as I said, and just, I was like this crazy person. I was just reading. And I would read it once and I got it. It made sense. So I left my gift of artist behind. I lost all my abilities as a skilled makeup artist, and that left me exactly 7 years to the death of my first life, and was replaced by numerology and astrology. And I began to start writing, keeping a journal, and so this gift of one artistic ability left, and this new artistic ability as a writer and a speaker came to the foreground.
I mean, so what you're describing is an incredible transformation. It's like a complete transformation of you as a person here on this earth.
Well, what's interesting about that, the person that I was before and the person that I was merging into were just, it was like, you know, two different people.
Yeah.
I lost my ability as an artist and came back. What I lost in the hand of artistry with the paintbrush became the pen. Mm. And so, it was like, and I thank God for this new gift because it became – I have to say, it was the blessing of my life. I you're talking to someone who failed in math in college and in high school. So I was like, math, ugh. And everything, you know, as a metaphysical practice, I mean, numerology, astrology, to tarot, you know, the I Ching, everything is based on a mathematical principle. Mm-hmm. And so when you understand that math, music, and sound are all one vibration, when they're merged together, that became, as I said, for me, you know, my new land. So that's, I set out on that journey. And as I said, I've been very blessed with clients all around the world.
It's really interesting because I had a similar experience back in the 70s when I was doing my training as a spiritualist minister and hands-on healing, mediumship, and channeling. And I also was in a meditation, in a group meditation, and saw the universe presented to me in mathematical equations.
Yeah.
And it was the same sort of thing. I needed remedial algebra to get through nursing school. I mean, you're talking about such, you know, such a different part of my brain. And yet I had that complete knowingness, even though I could not explain it to anyone, but it was a knowingness that what I was seeing was correct. So what comes up for me as I'm listening to you, certainly some commonalities of what we've experienced, but I have two questions that are sort of pressing. One is, as you were going through this transformation, and it sounds to me that remarkably you were so present in it, what about the fear, Peter? How did you experience the fear? I mean, to recognize that your artistry that was at the basis of your life, right? Every expression of your life, as well as your financial life. Tell me about that. How did you deal with that?
The first thing, and I have to go back and thank my industry, meaning the television film industry, because one thing that you learn, whether you're an actor, whether you're a writer, whether you're a musician, whether you are a screenplay writer, whether you are a producer, you know, there's no such word as no. If you want to make it in our industry, the first thing you learn is rejection. And you're going to hear 1,000 no's before you hear the one yes. So when I heard the doctors give me their diagnosis of I had 3 months to live and we can't explain this, that, and the other, you know, one or two things happens, you know, when we're all faced with disasters and challenges and life-changing events, obviously. But for me, it was like, what can you do? You know, and so I thought, I went back to, there's no such word as no. There's no such word as no. So I had to dismiss their opinion of me and what they were seeing and go into listening to what my heart was saying. So I go back to something.
Bingo.
What someone else's opinion, even when they're medically diagnosing you, and you, I'm not saying that I, you know, I listened to them. But I knew what I saw on the other side. So that became the driving force to wellness, to healing. And so I denied. I listened. And I did go to a place of fear. But I also went to this place of, you can do this. You can walk again. I would see myself walking again. They said I would never run again. I can't run today, but I certainly can get on a treadmill. Mm-hmm. So I remember that determination just came in. Where it came from, I don't know. I wish I could say to you that I read something on how to be focused and determined. I think something from the other side stepped in and made me walk my talk and made me believe in me. And I had to dismiss their opinion. So that was the first thing. And then getting on to the other part of your question, I think we all have to trust that inner voice. Mm-hmm. And that inner voice isn't a loud voice, it's a whisper. And so I began to listen to the whispers that were coming in. And that, despite all the hardships, I always go back to that whisper. No matter what I was faced with, and I was faced with a lot of medical. It took me 2 years to recover. I stood at 89 pounds. I had a staph infection on my face. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was in a wheelchair. I was in and out of blurred vision. I never quite recovered my vision, and I never quite recovered the strength of my legs. But you know what? I can walk. I can see. And that taught me the first step of appreciation. Here's what you have. Work with it.
So what I'm hearing you say is that acceptance is such a vital part of being able to make changes and move forward. So, and what you're also describing is an incredible process of letting go of this image that you had of yourself, this expectation of even who you saw yourself as, and accepting where you were. And this is the paradox, isn't it, Peter? It's accepting where we are and yet knowing that we can go forward from there and that new changes will take place. It's incredible. Your story is incredible. And I think most moving to me is the place within your heart that this is coming from. And I'm sure that our listening audience can feel that. It goes beyond just an interest. This is who you are, truly.
Well, you know, I think all of us are a little Mikeys in the world. You know, we all have our divorces and our broken hearts. We all have, you know, the bosses who don't treat us well. We've all, at one time or another in our life, have experienced what I call those curveballs. And I went through a lot of curveballs. But what I did learn how to do was how to bat the curveball and hit it out of the park.
Love it.
And that, once you learn that, and I said, what I learned to do, and I want to go back, this is very important, other people's opinions did not matter at this point. What mattered was what I saw on the other side, and what mattered was I could do it. Over and over, I kept saying, you can do this, you can see it, you will walk, you can see, you are healthy. I kept saying this over and over and over again, until the point that I was walking in my truth. And I say walking in my truth, I basically was crawling on.
Crawling.
And I said, when I say crawling, the nurses would come in, and there I was on the floor, you know, because I was determined I would crawl to the chair and force myself to get up. And that was my first step. Think about that.
Oh, my God.
As a baby, you know, eventually when you come in into the soul level as a child and you're taught how to walk, one day you're crawling and one day you're walking. Well, that's kind of the theory of how I went back to starting all over again. So crawling to walking and to talking and to believing and to seeing and to experiencing and to going off and becoming. And I'm very, and I say this not out of ego, but becoming the person that I am today. Yeah. That I feel is my greatest blessing, is the person that I've become today. I love the person that I am today. And I say that from a humble heart.
We love the person you are today. So I want to really thank you from my humble heart that you are where you are. And what you're describing is, and this is so powerful, I hope everyone really is paying attention to this, that incredible act of self-love that enabled you to give up the opinions of others. It feels to me like that was really the catalyst for you just completely transforming.
I mean, you know, their synopsis of me was so bleak and dark and dreary, and I'm like, and I came back with such life, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, even though I wasn't able to walk or, you know, or see, but inside of me was this, you know, it's like going to the ocean early morning and eating, you know, or drinking a cup of coffee or being there late at nighttime and eating ice cream and watching the waves come in. You're just at this place called peace. And I was just excited to come back with all this information. You know, I was just, you know, how do you explain this? I came back with the gift and no one believed me. So I learned.
And you are very learned.
I am very I learned to believe in, you know, you doubt, you know, for those of who crossed over, you come back with, you know, the shoulda, coulda, wouldas, and was this really, did this happen to me? And you hear all these negative opinions again about, you know, crossing over at that period of time when I crossed over in the late 80s. And but you know truth, and you know what you saw, and you know what you felt.
Yeah.
And you know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know what that love that was inside of you. And, you know, so for me, I just go back to that moment. As I said, and again, I say this with a humble heart. They teach you in numerology that everything is based upon a choice. Today, listening to this show, you know, the choice of what you wear today, the choice of going to work in or not, the choice of, you know, going to see a certain movie, the choice of sitting down and reading a good book. Everything's based on a choice. And so once I learned that choice played a significant part in my life, the choices I began to make became pivotal.
Yeah.
They became extremely important. And so the first choice I had to make was to heal my body. And then the second choice I had to make was take this information and do something with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a real call for love, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow, amazing. But I love that you brought in this whole concept of choice. So I would love to just dive into our forgiveness discussion right now, because I know that you and I both share this belief that choice is essential for forgiveness. What do you think? What can you share with our audience? How does it play a role in actually forgiving?
First of all, and I'm going to go to the number one hook that everyone seems to be, you know, when they are in a relationship that's not going in the direction they like. Let's say they're involved in a, you know, a relationship that's addictive. You know, let's say you're involved with an alcoholic spouse, or right. for that matter, you are in a relationship with someone who just doesn't treat you well. Every time we're in a relationship, this is a homework assignment from the divine, from I call the universe, you know, from heaven, if you will. And our choice is to take a look at this relationship. How is it serving consciousness for both of us? And if it's not serving either one of you, and you're fighting and you're arguing, then their choice is, I need to pay attention to this. And what happens, we have to go back to what I call the hook. Where in your past, you know, in your childhood or your teen years, or for that matter, your early adult years, who was the person that first hurt you, the person that broke your heart? You know, and when we're referring this to relationships, and that becomes your hook. So an example, I go back to girls, let's say they in high school and their boyfriend basically cheated on them. And then they kind of set themselves up to have this hook later on in life with the same type of relationship, because that's what they learned about love, was that someone wasn't faithful to me or someone wasn't honest with me. So we carry that same hook with us. So when I go back to choice, you're given a choice to understand, where did this hook affect me the most? Am I still dealing with this same girl or boy teen mentality of relationships? And you have to take a look at, am I still relating to love as I was when I was a teenager? And if I am, then I need to make that choice to change. And so forgiveness means go back and forgive that first hurt, that first disappointment, that first, what I call that first, you know, serious, I guess the only way I can say it, like that push that really just stayed with us.
Yeah.
And so what's happening, you're given a choice daily. Do I want to stay in this relationship? Do I want to continue this? Is this really love? How is this best serving me? And how is this best serving this relationship? And how is it best serving, you know, my higher consciousness, my higher purpose, my higher road? Because that's what it really comes down to. And once you make the choice, you go in and accept this relationship for what it is. If it's good, bad, or indifferent, or, you know, it's whatever that conflict might be, examine that. And then go to a place I called, you know, understand the hurt that you've experienced and understand the sorrow that you've experienced. Don't deny it. These are real feelings. That's what we do. We deny it. But examine it and understand it, and then try to move past it one step at a time. I'm not asking you to end this relationship, but I am asking you to take a look at the clues of where this relationship is going. This is what I say to all my clients. How do you feel when you're with this person? How do you feel when you're away from that person? What are your goals? What are his goals or her goals? And do your goals support each other? Right there gives you a choice to make. Because in most cases in a conflicted relationship, their goals aren't similar. How they feel, you know, when I'm with this person basically describes the kind of relationship you're involved in. And how do you feel when you're away from this person? What if you're needy, if you're codependent and you're anxious? Then right off the bat, that tells you this is not coming from a loving place.
Right.
This is coming from a needy place. Mm-hmm. So identify the hook. Where do you need to make a choice? Understand the hurt and sorrow, and then try to take those baby steps to your new, I call it the exit point. You know, your next goal, your next chapter. But and just take those small steps. And I always say, ask the universe to show me the truth.
I love
because
that.
The universe will show you the truth. Now, when they show you the truth, be willing to accept the truth. And then you make a decision.
Yeah. Amazing. And I think you just expressed that in such a way that is going to bring clarity to a lot of people. But I think one of the questions that came up for me as you were speaking is, like, why do we continue to hold on to the hurt and the sorrow? If we know that it's not for our highest good, we can feel that it is, you know, depleting us of essential life force energy and preventing us from really showing up in the world and experiencing all the blessings of life. Why do we keep holding on?
Because we hold on. I'm going to give you, think about this. And it happened to me. I fell off a swing and basically, you know, broke my ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that pain so well. I just remember falling off the swing. I remember it, getting caught. I mean, I broke my ankle. The same thing happened to me when I broke my collarbone. You hold on to the pain. You recognize the pain. But you want to, when you go back to that moment, we don't carry that broken collarbone or that broken ankle with us for the rest of our life. But for some reason, when it deals with a broken heart, oh my God, we want to carry it to the river. We want to carry it to the ocean. We want everyone to hear our pain and our hurt and what they did and said and what they didn't do and what they should have done, but they didn't. He didn't call me. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he doesn't love me anymore. He's seeing someone else. You know, whatever those conflicts are, you know, and we hold on to them. So the first thing is let go.
Mm.
It's such a simple thing to do, but such a complicated thing to really understand.
Oh, it is. It is. And I think it really demands that we do some real deep introspection. And I know you talk about this in your book, Keymaster.
Right.
Can you just share with us, like, why is that essential? I know you talk about it being the inventory of the self.
Yeah.
What
One
do we
thing-
do?
And thank you for asking this question. It's a brilliant question, and I really want to answer this to the best of my ability in terms of my inner ability. I learned growing up as a Catholic, and it's funny because, like I said, I'm not a practicing Catholic, but one thing they taught us, you go to confession, you confess your sins every Sunday, and I thought, ugh, I just despise going into the confessional booth and talk to the priest about my sins and this, that, and the other. But when I crossed over, what I learned was that everything I saw basically was an inventory of my life review. What I did, what I didn't do, what I should have done, what I could have done, how I didn't shine, where I did shine. And so when I came back, I began to do an honest and thorough inventory of myself. And when I would write down, you know, these are my shiny moments. This is what I'm most proud of. Well, I'm a good speaker now, and I really care about people, and I'm an animal advocate, and I do all these little great things about myself. This is my inventory. And now the other side, this is where I'm not shining, and I tend to procrastinate. Maybe I talk too much. You know, sometimes coming back as a near-death experience, I'm hypersensitive. So what I did, I took an honest and complete inventory of the good things, and I looked at my not-so-shiny moments and said, these are the things I need to work on.
Mm.
So my homework assignment was, this is where I shine, so I know this is an area where I score, you know, 99.9%, and over here maybe I'm, you know, scoring a 72. So my homework assignment was work on these things. And when I began to work on these things that I call my hooks, my letting go, my understanding, my acceptance, all these things, you know, learning to do, as I said, those little tedious things we don't like to do, then I began to enjoy these things that were tedious and just welcome them with open arms. So when you're doing an inventory, it has to be honest. And let me take it a step further. I died on November the 11th at 11:11 p.m. for 11 minutes. My new birthday is 11:11 in November. Mm-hmm. And I go off until the 29th of November, someplace on the planet, wherever that might be. 1 year is Maui, 1 year is Sedona, 1 year it could be down in Chichen Itza. I mean, I go off and I do what I call my inventory. You know, what I need to forgive, what I need to let go of, what I was, where I was most hurt by someone, by what they did or what they said. And then I do my inventory. This is where you shine this past year. This is where you go to the table there on a beach or in the, what I did at the pyramids, and I write all this stuff down and I just give it to the universe. Mm-hmm. And I let it go. 1 year I wrote everything down when I was in Maui. I wrote all my forgiveness, who I need to let go of, and the hurt that I experienced by this one or two or three people for the year and what they said. And I wrote it all down, you know, and then I went out and wrote it down and I watched the tide come in, the ocean waves come in and take my inventory out to sea, and I let it go.
Wow.
And that's how you do it. And when you begin to do a thorough cleaning of self, all of a sudden this newness shows up and you begin to see other great people coming into your life. I go back to Maui. I was there every morning at 6 o'clock in the morning doing my inventory when there was no one on the beach, just a few. And every day this woman would come by and she'd look at me and she'd walk her dog and she'd just kind of wink at me and smile. But I didn't know if she was winking like, oh, this silly guy is doing something silly. And then I think the fifth or sixth day she came by and she's like, may I ask you what you're doing? And I said, yes. And I said, I told her what I was doing. And I said, I'm doing an inventory and I'm doing a gratitude list and I'm doing a letting go. And she said, it's so funny she'd say that. She said, because I go further down the beach and I do the same thing.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
So the next day we came to this beach and we both wrote our inventory down on the beach and we watched the waves take our inventory off into the ocean. And we became friends from that point on. So what I say to you, you never know what the universe has in store for you.
That's right.
So open yourself up, and if it seems silly to the naked eye, so what? Who cares? I don't care what they think about me. I know what's best for my soul. So I let it go, and oh my God, we just had the best time laughing and crying and letting go and holding each other, a complete stranger.
Wow.
You know?
It just sounds so powerful. Oh my God, I can feel that. Ugh.
So that's what I say, do an honest and thorough inventory. They teach you that in AA. For those who have or are attending AA, the fourth and eighth step, do a thorough and complete inventory of self. And, you know, you make it known to yourself. In the eighth step, you share that. Mm. And what I learned to do, you know, I thought I would go to all these open meetings and I would listen to those on Saturday night, their stories of resurrection. And they talk about the fourth and eighth step. And I began to apply that into my life. And so when I felt I hurt someone, I was the first person to say, I'm sorry. It wasn't about the conflict. It wasn't about what was said. It was about honoring that this is where I failed. And it's not about what you did, though it can be great. But it was important for me to take the first step to say, I am sorry for what I said or what I did. And I began to take an inventory of all those things I did. And now that inventory is one or two things as opposed to, you know, 25 things.
Sure.
Because you become aware of what you're doing or saying or not doing. Words either help or they harm.
Yeah. And what you're describing here, I think, is also such an important point. And I want to thank you, really, for all of the wonderful information and the tools that you're sharing with our audience. But what is really striking me is what you're describing is that you're actually creating a consciousness. So, yes, you go once a year and you put all of your whole heart right into that processing. But my guess is that because, as you said, you now have a list of maybe three or four or five things as opposed to, you know, 50 things before, that you've developed an awareness about when you are, when you have shifted out of that energy and need to shift back in to the energy of alignment. So it sounds to me like you are actually in process maybe 24/7. Is that true?
Always, because we go back to the near-death experience. Yeah. What I saw on the other side was what I didn't do, what I should have done, what I could have done. You know, I didn't see myself, you know, robbing a bank. I didn't see myself, you know, murdering someone. I didn't see myself, you know, going off and doing horrible things to another person. It was those little things, those little things that we forget about. You know, no one else is seeing this. You know, I'm the person. My friends make fun of me. They said, "Oh, Ziggy, what are you doing now?" Well, you know, it's very hot here in California, especially this summer. And I go out at Walmart and I saw this little young Hispanic boy, you know, dressed up like as though he was in the, well, we are in the desert here, but, and he just had all these clothes on and he was collecting all the grocery carts. And people were leaving their grocery carts just everywhere. I know it was hot and they didn't want to take the effort or time to go and put the carts back in the grocery carts back in the cart bin. So I was out there collecting all the grocery carts and putting them in the bin. And he just was stunned that I was doing that at 118 degrees.
Wow.
But you know, it wasn't because I was, oh, I'm going to be a good person and do something good. I saw what he was doing. And he did it with such love and such compassion. He was like playing with the carts. He was having so much fun. And I remember I got those carts and I just rolled them into that bin. And here we are at 8 o'clock in the morning and it's already 118 degrees. And I'm like, we're just having fun. So you took something mundane and we turned it into fun. And he was a complete stranger. My goal every day is to find one person that I connect with and find the best of that person, that love of that person that's inside of them. And you'd be amazed what you find when you open yourself up.
I can only imagine how fantastic. One of the things that came into my mind as you were talking about how these things collect right inside of us, and they're things that perhaps we've overlooked, ways that we've affected other people we're not aware of. And I couldn't help but think about how that really erodes our sense of self, and it further distances us from the truth of our being and who we came here to be. So I think that that's something that we all really need to incorporate. And that's this understanding that this process of forgiveness, which we now know is an ongoing process, it's not just with that person or this person, that we have to engage in this. So that we are as clear as you.
Well, I have to share this with you, and I'm going to use a great little story here. But all my life, I had really, I would say, not so kind bosses. You know, and we've all had those bosses, you know, that we feel they don't get us, they don't honor us, they don't treat us well. I mean, we could go down the list of the boss thing. But I had bosses who liked to scream at me. And, you know, when you come back from the other side, you know, you come back with this kind of like, oh, my God, the world is beautiful and it's lovely and I want to be at peace every day. And, you know, I wasn't attracted to that in my life, you know, with these bosses that were calling themselves, you know, the person that knew the best road for the company to take. And so I began to do my homework. I thought, you know what? I deserve a really great boss. And that was part of my inventory. When I go off and do my God time, you know, from 11:11 to 11:29, I call it my God time. I said, you know what? I deserve a great boss. Well, it didn't happen the first or the second or the third year, but it did happen in 1996, where the most amazing boss came into my life. It was a female, and she was into all this stuff that I'm into. And I looked at her, and she said, "Where did you come from?" I said, "Where did you come from?" But I realized that I put it out in my inventory list. Mm-hmm. I deserve a great boss. We are still friends today.
Amazing.
And so I think if you just ask the universe, we don't ask enough.
Right.
We beg, we plead, we hope, we fear, we cry. Oh, please send me a great boss. Oh, please send me a wonderful relationship. I don't do that. I go to the top of the mountain and I put out to the universe, I am worthy, I am lovely, I'm a great person, and you know my heart. You provide the people, the place, and the situation, and my job is to show up, and whoever you send is my homework assignment, and I bless it.
Oh, my God, how fabulous.
And then when I got a great boss, I was like, you see, this stuff works.
Yeah, it does. And I have to say, I'm so sad, but we're running out of time, and I want to make certain that we talk about one more thing.
Sure, sure, sure.
And that is, I know that you have an incredibly powerful workshop that you offer to people, and there's a particular ritual that you teach, and I think that this would be a very powerful tool for our audience. Would you mind sharing that?
Yeah, the power of goodbye is something I've been traveling around the country doing, and I did this in Virginia Beach, and they were stunned. And we're not taught how to say goodbye to those people that, an example, when we're in the middle of a divorce, or we're ending a relationship, or we're saying goodbye to a company, or we're saying goodbye to someone who we never got the chance to say goodbye to. Meaning all my life, I lost my family by the time I was in my early 20s, brothers, sister, father, aunts, uncles, cousins. So I never got the chance to say goodbye. So what I do, we go into an hour room, and I put on beautiful, sweet music. Of just, you know, what I call love song music, you know, the all those songs that are sappy. And then what I have them do, I get them to write a letter or letters to those people they never get a chance to say goodbye to. It could be that a relationship ended on a really bad note and you never got the chance to really come to the table and say, you know what, thank you for being in my life. I know we separated on such an angry note, but now I'm taking the moment to say the power of goodbye to you, and you send them on their way. And the power of goodbye, what it does, it teaches us how to let go and let God, and by doing so, it allows the new energy to come in. And so I have to say that when we learn to say goodbye to my brother, my sister, I mean, I lost them in the middle of the night, and I never had that chance to say, you know, I love you and goodbye. So I took this moment, and I teach people how to say goodbye to those who left them, who they get a chance to say goodbye to, and those who they want to forgive. And you'd be surprised what happens in that room. And then at the end of that lesson, I ask people to go up and share their moments. Now, I'd have to say 90% of people, they're already crying and the room is full of tears and emotions, right? But there was a 92-year-old man who came to this workshop and basically criticized and he was just one of those hecklers throughout Friday, Saturday, and Sunday until we got to the power of goodbye. And he was the first person to raise his hand. And he stood up. I kind of get emotional.
Well, I can feel that.
But he got up. He said, by the time I was in my 60s, I lost my wife. I lost all my children. I was the only person. And he said, I was so horrible to my children. I was so horrible to my wife. And I didn't want to say goodbye to them. And he got up. And tears were coming out of his. I was just so emotional, and everyone was crying. And he said, I cannot thank you enough for teaching me the power of goodbye. And this man, who was agnostic, started donating his time and helping, you know, the Unity churches out. He would go and, you know, pick up the chairs, he would bring food. His whole life changed because he was set free. And this is a sense of freedom when you get the chance to say goodbye to those people that you never got the chance to say goodbye to. So when that happens in your life, you get to climb the next mountain, that next pinnacle. So I say, allow the power of goodbye to be a part of your process this year. And forgive, forget, and forge ahead.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Oh, my God. I mean, I have tears in my eyes, and I am sure that those listening can really feel the power of what you have shared here with us today. And I'm just going to put this out there, Peter. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, I would love to.
I know that we have so much to share here together. And the power of, you know, who you are and what continues to evolve through you is something that we all need to hear. Yeah. And so again, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your heart and your story and your incredible tools and just every part of you. You've really blessed us.
Yeah. Well, I have to say something as a closing statement to your listening audience. You know, as I said, I was the Mikey. I was in a wheelchair. I couldn't see. I was 89 pounds, and no one believed me, and I still did it. You know, it's not about our circumstances, though they might be great. It's what you do with those circumstances that makes you great. So go out and be that Mikey. I dare you to be that person that shines, because we need you out there.
Yep.
Go be that person.
We sure do. And don't let anybody else's opinion have any influence on you whatsoever.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
My deepest joy and pleasure and honor to have you here. And just very quickly, to find out more about Peter Anthony, please go to his website, theaccidentalprophet.com, and run out and buy his book, please. There's so much in it. The Keymaster is filled with all the keys that you need to master your life. So just do it. And I just want to thank all of our audience for tuning in.
Absolutely.
And again, I'm Marcy Newman, your Heart Shift coach, and I'm sending you huge hugs and heart shifts, and I'll see you all next time. Thank you, and thank you, Peter.
You're welcome. Thank you.